butterfly. Within a few hours of travel, it died altogether. By that point, however, they had the enemy's general course, assuming the Aedan Rane was travelling with them, which Dante wasn't sure of, but Gladick insisted was almost certainly the case, and had passed by several other bits of debris cast aside by the living humans travelling with the army. All they had to do was catch up before the enemy changed course. Yet as soon as the fruit rind's connection gave out, so did the trail of garbage. As time wore on, Dante scanned the waters to all sides, sourness growing in his stomach. "We've lost the trail," he said. "They must have changed direction. We should backtrack to the last refuse we saw. We can paddle in concentric circles until we locate another sign." Blaze furrowed his brow. "You think the best way to catch up to our foes is to sail around in circles?" "We'll lose some ground at first, but we don't have a choice. It's better than losing them altogether." Gladick was as still as a stump. "We will keep going forward. We've made a mistake. Typically, you don't solve a mistake by continuing to make it twice as hard."
"Although that would explain a lot about him," Blaze said.
"I have become an expert in losing faith." Gladick gestured to the south. "And I tell you that now is not the time to give up." Spite gathered in the back of Dante's skull. "I'd have thought that a complete lack of evidence is a great reason to lose faith, but your complete lack of evidence has convinced me otherwise. On we go." Volo shrugged and paddled onward. Around them, the growth stopped being rocks that looked like trees and started being actual trees again, albeit ghostly white ones. The water remained empty of any spoor. Gladick sat with his eyes forward and glazed, looking like a boy who had been dragged to the temple sermon when the year's first good snow was busy falling outside.
"You see that?" Volo pointed ahead. "Because if you don't, you're all even older than you look."
100 feet ahead, light shimmered on the water. At first, Dante thought it was a patch of oil, or an illusion. But it only strengthened, defining itself into a ribbon that weaved through the many small islands that humped from the water like the bleached shells of turtles. Gladick allowed himself a smile.
"The path is revealed in ether."
"Let me guess," Dante said. "Just as Tame told you it would be."
"Tame doesn't speak to me. Does Aron speak to you?"
"Only to tell Dante what a disappointment he is," Blaze said. "How did you know it'd be here?"
"I don't believe the Aedan Rane expected pursued."
Gladick ducked under a branch.
"After so long in the prison of the Riolace, his hunger for his old power will be immense. He will head straight to his feeding."
Back on the hunt, Volo and Blaze paddled with renewed purpose. When their arms wore out, they switched with Naren and Dante. They entered the ruins they'd passed through on the way to the wound, crumbling walls and foundations lying among the rubble of themselves. Dante now understood why they'd been abandoned. If it was abandonment that had destroyed them, and not the wrath of the Aedan Rane. The trees changed, too. Slim orange things that braided together at the trunk, like the ropes of warships, the leaves slender and black. Grotesque as they were, after the otherworldly and unstirring forests around the wound, they were an oddly welcome sight. After the deadness of the wound, every swoop of a dragonfly or ripple of a breaching fish made Dante jerk his head around to make sure they weren't about to be attacked. Mortals didn't have the focus to watch everything around them, did they? There was so much happening at any given time that you could only pay attention to a tiny sliver of it. Dante was abruptly discombobulated by the idea that this was true of all facets of life, that for all his wisdom, all his acuity, he was actually seeing no more than a single fly as it bumbled about, while being blind to the wondrous forest that the fly lived within. For miles, the brightness of the trail held steady. As the afternoon wore on, the partial sunlight seemed to diminish it, and when dusk neared and daylight waned, the trail was fainter than ever. Dante peered down at the ribbon of ether as it passed beneath her bow. "Is the path fading?"
"They outpace us," Gladick said. "They're traveling with a small army. They should be as slow as the fattest oarsmen."
"Their oarsmen are blighted. While they aren't physically quick, they are tireless. If we wish to catch them, we must be the same."
Blaze swore.
"Easy for you to say, one arm. You don't have to paddle."
"We might not have the endurance of the half-undead," Dante said, "but we do have the cheating powers of humans. Paddle hard enough to wear yourself out within 10 or 15 minutes. Let me know when you're starting to flag."
"The sign will be that I'm calling you a god's damn slave driver."
The bugs were starting to get to them, and before they carried on, Volo passed around the red paste the Tanarians used to ward off the worst of the bites. This done, Blaze and Volo dug into the water, arms flexing as they pulled themselves forward. The canoe sliced along fast enough to ruffle Dante's hair. Blaze and Volo were soon breathing hard, the collars and underarms of the jabats darkening with sweat. They continued on until they were red-faced, then Dante and Naren spelled them. The ribbon of ether seemed to steady out. They swapped rowing duties again, then a third time. Night fell, the air awash with the chirp of bugs and frogs. The trail shined like melted stars, alighting the underside of the forest canopy. Before Blaze and Volo took their next shift, Dante sent the nether into their muscles, washing away most of their tiredness, and tended to the blisters forming on their hands. When it was their turn, he did the same for himself and Naren. They covered mile after mile, the trail getting a little stronger by the hour. When the nether grew less effective at taking away their exhaustion, they slowed at last, three of them snoring in the boat while one paddled onward at a slow but sustainable pace. Whenever Dante woke, Gladick was seated in the same position in the stern, his eyes sunken pits within the crags of his face, which, in the glow of the ether, looked as white as something left in water for too long. He gazed into the ethereal pathway like it was a scroll unfurling before him, one filled with secrets that had been lost for ages. By morning, they were ready to restart their frantic pace. The landscape flew past them, easing from the warped orange trees surrounding the greater wound of the world, and back into the typical swamp of Tanara Tain, which meant that it was also once more full of awful creatures, to say nothing of the schools of flesh-eating Ziki Oko swimming under the surface. It also made for an abundance of insects. With the trail growing brighter, Dante slew a trio of dragonflies and reanimated them. He directed one a half mile ahead to make sure they weren't about to run into anything nasty, then sent the other two whirring high above the canopy, scouting for the enemy flotilla.
"A disgusting process," Gladick commented.
"Taking life and subverting it into parody of itself."
Dante pulled back from the insect's sight.
"Do you give yourself 50 lashes and penance whenever you wear a buckskin? Or eat a rasher of bacon? The insects are just a tool, nothing more.
By early afternoon, the ethereal path was glowing so hard, Blaze muttered that you could cook by it. A group of animals screamed from the trees. Volo swore to herself and angled away from the yelping creatures. A few minutes later, she swung around a stand of mangroves growing in a semicircle. Inside the circle, wooden cages hung from the branches, suspended a few feet over the slack water. They were painted red and filled with human bones. In any other realm, it would have looked like a scene of gruesome torture, but in Tanara Tain, it was a cemetery.
"I know this place," Polo said. "It's for the village of Ragadon. They breed combfish here. Rip out the ribs and give them a good boil, and you've got the best comb you'll ever find."
Dante reached for the gunwale of the canoe. "Could this village be what the lich is coming for?"
"Stands to reason," Blaze said. "You don't get a mane of hair like his without a quality fish comb."
"Which way is it from here?" Volo did some thinking, then pointed several degrees to the right of the path the ether was currently displaying.
"That way. Not far."
Dante shifted his vision to his dragonflies, diverting two of them in the direction Volo had indicated, one soaring high and the second skimming beneath the canopy. The upper dragonfly veered toward a clearing. Like most Tanarian settlements, it was roughly circular, with a few outer islands raised for paddies and the thickly growing stands of banana trees. In the center, a long pier supported dozens of rafts bearing small shacks. People tended to the fish pens and worked beneath tarps that kept off the worst of the sun.
"Found the village," Dante said, "but I'm not seeing any rampaging hordes."
Naren pressed his finger to his upper lip.
"Is there any chance the lich is merely passing by?"
"Even if he is, we have to warn them," Blaze said. "Tell them to get somewhere safe."
"Precisely where might be safe?"
Gladig gestured to their surroundings.
"All of this will soon be his. Death is the safest place they can be."
"We should sweep in and kill them ourselves, then. Is that your solution to everything?"
"We'll warn them first," Dante said. "Then finish tracking down the White Lich."
They abandoned the trail and made way for Ragadon, paddling hard. Dante kept one dragonfly circling above the settlement, while the other two searched in the direction the ethereal path had been taking. While their canoe was still a mile out, the circling dragonfly spotted movement within the trees beyond the broad round clearing that held the village. Dante sent the insect in for a closer look. Seated in the canoe, his eyes flew open.
"The White Lich! He's right outside the town! And so is his army!"
He took the dragonfly lower. The lich's forces were spread across scores of canoes, most of them filled with half-naked blighted who paddled forward with crude, heavy strokes. The canoes near the back of the armada were crewed with members of the Righteous Monsoon, who remained in possession of their humanity, at least for the moment. The Aedan Rane sat on a white chair atop a platform mounted across two canoes. His long, white halberd lay across his knees. Next to his immense bulk, 10 feet tall, with the build of a blacksmith, the blighted crew looked as scrawny as toddlers. His skin and clothes were the blue-white of mountain snow that had never melted. While his clothing looked solid enough, his skin was semi-translucent and glowed from within like some variant of ether. His eyes cycled between every shade of blue. His face was beardless and looked to have been carved from ice. His features were foreign, the corners of his eyes and mouth stretching too far to the sides, his nose a thick wedge dividing his face.
"We're too far away to warn them, aren't we?" Blaze said.
Please tell me he's just there to challenge them to a friendly game of run.
The canoes were already spreading out to circle the village, sticking to the cover of the trees.
Dante punched his thigh. He's surrounding them. Total ambush. We have to move fast.
Gladig pressed his lips into a tight line. You can't save them now.
But we can set the Andrak on him before the fighting's over.
The priest smiled grimly.
You have no mind for sentimentality, do you? No wonder you make for a challenging foe.
Uncertain if that was something to be proud of, Dante motioned them onward. The Star Eater slid through the water beneath them, a disturbance of nether that felt wrong to be part of.
As the Aedan Rane's forces circled Ragadon,
Dante racked his mind for a way to warn the villagers, but they were too far away for him to do something like write a message in the sky.
Anyway, thanks to the policies of their former emperor, the Tenarians were completely illiterate.
Through the dragonfly's limited hearing, he heard a man cry out from the trees ringing the settlement. A figure appeared in a simple canoe, paddling hard toward the low-lying gate set into the underwater nets that surrounded the village in order to keep out the flesh-eating Ziki Oko. A pair of workers glanced at him from the outer paddies. As he continued to shout, two canoes of monsoon soldiers emerged from the trees and swung about. Archers stood and loosed arrows. These slashed down around the lone boatman, sending up gouts of water. The second volley struck him down, slumping him over his gunwale. His canoe drifted to a stop. The two paddy farmers jumped in their canoe and paddled like mad toward the town dock, hollering as they went. People spilled from their house rafts, staring at the incoming boat, then ducked back inside their homes. Some emerged with short, bone-tipped spears or compact bows, the arrowheads hewn from high-quality Tenarian glass. Others carried small children, running to the northern edge of the docks. There, as in most Tenarian settlements, Ragadon had a single tower for defense. Built from mud bricks, it was 30 feet tall, bearing many narrow windows, and a single door of reinforced wood. As citizens piled into it, archers pulled canoes from the water and flipped them over on the docks around the tower, taking cover behind the hulls. Canoes full of blighted emerged from all sides of the forest. Seeing the pale, manic faces, some of the villagers wailed. The archers on the dock let fly with a few exploratory arrows, but the blighted didn't change course. They reached the outer nets and hacked through them. Arrows flew thickly. The blighted swung about and converged on the far end of the dock, leaping out without concern for their boats. Carrying spears, hatchets, and clubs, they raced from raft to raft, dragging dozens of people out from hiding. Clubs rose and fell, stilling the captives' kicking legs. The blighted bound them and tossed them in a heap on the dock. A contingent of blighted pulled away from the captives and ran pell-mell toward the tower, forcing the archers who'd been harassing them to lock themselves inside the fort. The blighted reached the door and pounded on it with hatchets, clubs, and bare fists, screaming thinly, their faces warped with hate and frustration, looking mad enough to chew their way through the door. Archers leaned from the upper windows and took what shots they could. The blighted fell one after another, hardly scratching the banded door. Heartened, the defenders yelled battle cries and redoubled their fire. The Aedan Rane's boat approached the end of the dock. He stepped forth, glaive held in his left hand, the tails of his white cape flapping behind him. Both ether and nether churned around his right hand, the shadows flowing like turbid water, the ether like light split by a prism. An arrow arced toward him. It struck his chest and broke in three pieces. Those that followed fell away just as harmlessly. The lich stopped 20 feet from the tower and raised his right hand. Without so much as a twitch in his expression, he sent Netha streaming toward the door. The door jerked, then ripped itself apart, vomiting shattered boards and twisted iron across the dock. The blighted bared their teeth and charged inside. The fighting was over within 3 minutes. The blighted marched the surviving defenders outside, packing them into a tight mass. Many of the villagers were bloody and in pain, but few appeared to have serious wounds.
"I don't understand," Dante said. "They're not killing the villagers."
Gladick nodded. He would not waste good lives. Through the dragonfly's eyes, Dante watched as the Aedan Rane gazed impassively at the prisoners.
"You did not understand what you fought, or you would not have resisted."
The lich's voice had a metallic ring, as though he were speaking through a giant stovepipe.
"Worry not. Now I bestow you with understanding."
He swiveled his craggy head to the blighted.
"You may take your tenth."
The blighted arched their backs in pleasure, eyes overflowing with hurt and gratitude. They swarmed forward, grabbing one out of every 10 villagers and dragging them screaming from the pile of bound people. The blighted ripped and clawed at their prey, digging their bare fingers into bellies, gnashing at necks and hands. The victims erupted with screams, their pain turning their voices inhuman. Blood spattered across the dock. Bits of flesh rolled and bounced. The blighted didn't even seem to be eating, just rending and chewing, shredding and destroying, strips of skin dribbling from their mouths and falling down their chests.
"What's happening out there?" Blay said. "You look like you're watching hell."
"I might be."
Shakily, Dante turned to Gladick.
"Send the Andrak to the edge of the forest."
The old priest lowered his gaze to the water. Dante could feel the density of the demon's nether slipping forward, lost in the murk. It soon passed from range of his senses. In the village, the dock was slick with blood and scattered with chunks, but Dante made himself keep watching. Anything he could learn from the savagery could be vital. The blighted slowed, calming from their mad and frenzied scrabbling. The wrath and pain on their faces seemed momentarily eased. The white lich gestured for them to move back. They wandered away with the sluggishness of those who feasted too much the night before. Some of them dragged severed arms or disembodied rib cages behind them. The white lich approached the remaining villagers. Some bucked and wriggled at their bonds, trying to roll away, even if it meant falling into the swamp and drowning. The lich made a flicking gesture. Netherial bonds locked them all in place.
"Right now, you fear."
He leaned closer.
"You should relish it. In another minute, you won't be able to experience that feeling ever again."
He lifted his finger, a dot of purest ether circling its tip, then seemed to think better, taking a heavy step forward.
"Do you understand the cruelty of the state the gods have condemned you to. In crafting you, they have made you more than the animals, but so much less than the divine. In result, you lack both the conviction of the beasts and the invulnerability of the immortals. Your existence is one of fear and frailty, with just enough of the divine spark to understand that you have been cheated, but lacking both the wisdom and the courage to know what to do about it. You would have gone to your graves in ignorance, only to serve your creators again in their heavens and hells, never to understand why you owe them for the misery they have filled you with, like water in a glass, nor how to escape it.
The lich parted his lips in a snarl, his teeth glinting.
But I have seen the shape of their plans. I have mapped a chart of its evil, and the path to tear it all down. Fear me if you think fear will help you. But I am your salvation. And together, we will destroy those who have cheated you.
He lifted the index finger of his right hand. The other fingers curled. Ether gleamed on his fingertip, as bright as a candle. Then a bonfire. Then the sun. Dante tried to shield his eyes with his hand. But the sight was inside his mind. He made himself watch, eyes streaming from the glare. A strange, tendrilled fog formed around the piles of frightened people. It lifted and snaked toward the lich. The people gasped, arching themselves like strung bows. As they sputtered, more fog spilled from their mouths, cohering into tight lines and probing toward the lich, who thrust back his shoulders. The tendrils flashed with pinpricks of light, intensifying like the rising of a white sun. The people began to scream. They bucked and thrashed, their skin grayed, marbling with red lines. The tendrils unspooled faster and faster, rushing at the lich and meeting his skin with erratic pulses of light. He closed his eyes, shuddering as the power entered his body.
Dante swallowed. Send in the Andrak.
You are certain, Gladick said. We have but one.
He's turning them.
He thinks he's safe.
Gladick turned away, a vague scowl overtaking his face as he bent to directing the Andrak.
It will be done.
What do you mean, he's turning them? Volo said.
Dante swore under his breath. Into something else. Something that isn't alive.
Where you're from, you say turning instead of killing. So, you would say, please turn that snake for me before it bites me.
Some people might say that.
Like who?
Blaze said. You, when you're lying to a young woman about what's happening, presumably because it's so gruesome that we're about to find out if an Andrak can soil itself.
Volo thrust out her jaw. I carry dead people around every corner of the swamp. I'm alone the whole time. I don't need you to protect me from the truth.
He's sucking the soul from them, Dante said.
or a vital essence of some kind. It's about as pleasant-looking as it sounds.
Blaze nodded. Well, can we make him not do that?
Dante watched as the people thrashed so hard they split the skin on their knees and elbows. They bucked a final time, then stilled. Their skin paled from the marbled gray to a sickly white. So far, the Aedan Rane had only targeted a quarter of the prisoners, and the others stared at the bodies with bulging eyes.
A dead man's eyes fluttered open. He tipped back his head and gasped, his face twisting with rage. Around him, the others shuddered and awakened,
becoming the Blighted.
I'm not kidding, Lay said. If he's massacring them, can we stop him?
Gladick shifted, adjusting his unfamiliar jabat. We would only add our corpses to theirs. This village must be sacrificed in order for others like it to be saved.
It must be sacrificed? Neat way to wash your hands of it.
You speak wisely. To reject the responsibility of what we do is to deceive ourselves into thinking we bear no guilt for it. So I will rephrase. We must sacrifice this village and be stained for our decision.
On the dock, the Lich swayed, lowering himself to one knee. The last of the tendrils of light curled around him like tame snakes, settling into his body with a final white pulse. Head bowed, he took a deep breath through his nostrils. The newly formed Blighted turned as one to stare at him. He gestured vaguely, motioning them to join the others.
How close is the demon? Dante said. It is within the clearing. Your orders?
Gladick raised a white eyebrow. Dante couldn't tell if there was anything ironic in it.
Send it in.
Dante guided the watching dragonfly higher, giving him a better vantage of the field. The Aedan Rane remained kneeling. Blue veins twinkled under the surface of his skin. The Blighted, old and new, watched him with curiosity. Still locked in place, some of the survivors moaned or cried, but most were silent, making no attempt to move. Dante had seen people's passive reaction to coming death 100 times before, but he still didn't understand why they didn't struggle against their fate. Was it the instinct of a lizard battered about by a cat, hoping that by playing dead its tormentor would lose interest? Or was the surrender of hopelessness even more powerful than the will to live? A black figure surged from the edge of the dock, barely disturbing the water as it vaulted onto the boards. The Andrak flexed its claws and leapt at the White Lich, grinning with a wickedness Dante had once thought was born from an evil love of the slaughter, but now understood was the thrill of combat and the testing of metal. The Aedan Rane's ever-changing eyes seemed foggy, as if he was watching a scene within another realm. He had set down his halberd while blighting the captives. He cast forth an arm in warding. The Star Eater raked its claw across the Lich's forearm. Nearly silver in color, glowing liquid stuck to its claws and oozed from the 3 gashes.
It has the blood!
Dante tried to jump to his feet in celebration. The canoe rocked violently beneath him, and he promptly reseated himself.
Tell it to get out!
Gladick closed his eyes, brow crinkling. On the dock, the Andrax struck again, pushing the Lich back a step.
It ignores me. It believes it can win.
The Star Eater brought its bloody claws to its mouth, licking them clean with a pointed black tongue.
Dante's heart beat hard, sweat squeezing from his skin. The White Lich drove a fist at the demon, which took the blow square in the chest but barely rocked back. Wisps of nether peeled away from the Andrak's body, but it was already reaching forward, inserting its claws through the Lich's guard and jabbing them into his stomach. The strike would have gutted a mortal man, possibly cut him right in half. The demon's claws sank no more than half an inch into the White Lich's belly before coming to a sudden stop. The Blighted widened their eyes in hate and swarmed forward, grabbing up the weapons they'd dropped so they could murder their share of the villagers with their bare hands. As the Lich and the demon traded blows, spilling a bit of nether and a few small spatters of iridescent white blood, the Lich began to react faster, blinking repeatedly as clarity returned to his eyes. A point of ether glared from his finger.
"Get it out of there!" Dante grabbed Gladik's shoulder. "The Lich is about to tear it apart!"
Gladik grimaced and nodded shortly. Sweat stood up across his brow. On the dock, the first of the Blighted reached the Andrak, hacking at it with hatchets and spears that didn't so much as scratch its shadowy body. It ignored them, launching a second flurry of attacks at the Lich, who blocked whatever he couldn't dodge, leaving a few shallow scratches across his arms. The Aedan Rane narrowed his eyes, battering down another attack, then pushed his right palm forward. A beam of eye-watering ether lashed between him and the Andrak's chest. Nether boiled away in dark clouds. A fist-sized hole opened through the demon's body. The Andrak's mouth widened, showing the star burning within its throat. It toppled backward from the edge of the dock and sliced into the murky waters. Dante punched the side of the canoe, skinning his knuckles.
"He's killed it!"
"No." Gladik's voice was calm. "My link to it remains alive, but the Andrak is wounded. It may need our help escaping." Blaze squinted.
"The thing we sent in to prevent us from getting our asses kicked by the big evil bastard now needs us to go fight the big bastard ourselves."
"We will not engage the Lich unless we are very desperate or very stupid."
"We have to go in," Dante said. "This could be our only chance to get what we need."
Blaze swore and picked up a paddle. The canoe sped through the trees, already within a half mile of the settlement. Dante pulled two dragonflies toward them to make sure the way ahead was clear of Blighted or monsoon pickets. The third dragonfly kept watch over the dock. A transparent cube of light appeared around the White Lich, condensing into his hands. He blasted at the water with lances of ether, following the Andrak's path away from him. Steam spread over the water with the suddenness of a marine fog rolling in from the sea. A beam of ether ripped into the side of a raft house, planks and splinters cartwheeling through the air. The Lich clenched his fist and ceased his assault. The demon had put too much space and cover between them. The blue-white figure conjured a ball of ether, sending it winging over the low rooftops. It steadied 6 feet above the water, streaming toward the trees, tracking the Andrak's position. The Blighted threw themselves into their canoes and paddled crazily after the ball of light. Monsoon soldiers joined the chase, keeping a bubble of space between themselves and the Blighted. Rowers brought the Lich's personal vessel before him. He stepped into it with no obvious haste. His soldiers pushed off, paddling hard to catch up with the others.
"The bad news," Dante said, "is that there are whole damn armies after the Andrak, including the Aedan Rani."
Naren ducked his head, angling for a better view through the trees.
"What is the good news?" "Who said there's any good news?"
He directed Volo to the right, veering them away from a monsoon canoe keeping watch on the woods. The trees thinned before them. Rain began to pelt the foliage as they reached the open water of the settlement. The ball of light, and presumably the Andrak, had already cleared the fishnets and was streaking toward them. The enemy canoes were strung out behind the light, the closest lagging it by 100 yards. The White Lich hadn't yet reached the fishnets, but he'd caught up to the back ranks of the Blighted. Volo and Blaze swung the canoe about, keeping them just inside the tree line. The ball of ether lined toward them. Suddenly concerned the Lich might notice them, and convert the harmless light into something most harmful, Dante called to the Nether, feeding it the blood from his skinned knuckles. He sent a bolt of it, hurtling toward the glowing ball. The two forces impacted with a burst of black and white motes. When these cleared, the ball was still trailing forward. Frowning, Dante hit it harder, knocking it apart. The Andrak emerged from the water, an arm's reach from the boat, making everyone but Gladik and Blaze jump. Its claws shook as it reached for the boat. Its body, normally pitch black, appeared hazy in spots, especially around the wound in its chest, which hadn't seemed to have healed at all.
"It needs inside," Gladik said. "It is too weakened to travel on its own."
Before Dante could object, the demon was hauling itself up the side of the boat. Though it was massive enough to capsize the canoe, they barely swayed. It crouched in the stern, folding its limbs to take up far less space than seemed possible. Blaze drove his paddle into the water, pulling them away from the oncoming horde.
"For all the amazing junk you people can do, has it never occurred to a single sorcerer that it might be useful to be able to grow wings?"
"I've done some work on it," Dante said, "but the ducks keep dying before I can get them all the way sewed on."
Blaze and Volo paddled with everything they had, drawing them into the darkness of the forest. Much of the forest enclosing the settlement was too dense to pass through, but the citizens had carved pathways through it, including the one the five of them were now using to escape. Dante extended his mind into the trees and the nether within them, harvesting great tangles of branches to close off the passage. The lead canoes crashed into the unexpected growth, the Blighted hissing in fury and whacking at the branches with ineffectual paddles. Blaze glanced over his shoulder.
"Can't be that easy, can't?" Light seared through the fresh growth, incinerating it along with at least one unlucky Blighted who'd flung herself into the branches to rip at them with her hands. As she burned, she tipped back her head and smiled at the sky. Her smoking husk plopped into the water with a sizzle.
"Stop your craft and bend your knee," the White Lich's voice rang through the woods. "Mercy can be yours, but it requires the humility to accept it."
The Blighted's canoes shot through the opening in the foliage, cinders clinging to their clothes and hair. Volo and Blaze were paddling with everything they were worth, but the furious strength of the undead would slowly overtake them. Gladik twisted in his seat, ether circling his fingers and wrists in shining bands.
"What you call mercy is the abnegation of the self. You would snuff out every sense of choice. And once our thoughts can be of nothing but you, you would tell us that is freedom at last."
"I know you."
An edge of amusement entered the Lich's voice.
"You are the one who hastened my liberation. Ah, the anguish on your face when your ambush failed. I have seen such looks many times before. Did you think that destroying me would make them forget the evils of your soul?"
Gladik made a choking sound, Broad, straight bands of ether rushed to his hands. He sent the light blazing behind them, shredding into the closest three canoes. The Blighted shuddered with the impact. Severed limbs spun into the water. As soon as they splashed down, the surface roiled with Ziki-Oko, feasting on the gifts of flesh. The second line of enemy canoes swept past the decrewed vessels. Gladik drew another stream of glittering lines and slung them at the Blighted. As the light closed on its targets, a tide of shadows poured from behind the undead, enfolding the ether and smothering it into nothing.
"You consider what you have to be great power, don't you?"
The Lich's words seared through the patter of the rain.
"You have worked a lifetime for it. Now, for your stubbornness, your refusal to accept the truth before you, you have tossed it aside like a pot of waste."
The canoes pursuing them broke to either side, leaving a clear avenue through the water. The air there darkened to twilight. Gladik thrust out his hand, his forearm as sinewy as if it had been skinned.
"Galand!"
Stiff cataracts of light poured from Gladik's hands, and then Dante felt it. The monstrous wave of Netha thundering toward them. He called a great flock of it to himself, sending the energy careening in the wake of Gladik's ether. The light hit the torrent of enemy shadows first, the two forces exploding into a mass of madly spinning sparks. The Lich's Netha carried onward, forcing past Gladik's efforts like a man wading through deep snow. Dante hit it with everything he could. Limbs of Netha tussled against each other like battling dogs. The air blackened until the trees within it were bare silhouettes. Still the Lich's attack ground forward, pushing Dante's defenses back foot by foot. It was the strongest attack he'd ever encountered. Trying to hold it back felt like trying to pull up a mountain by its roots. Sweat popped out from his brow. He wanted to yell out, but he was bearing down too hard to speak. The slightest slip of concentration, and the Netha would rush forward, annihilating them. His hands shook. The Lich's shadows pushed a foot closer, then lurched forward by 10. Dante felt himself about to give way. Gladik extended his fingers, spraying beams of light into the pressing wall of darkness. These carved away at the shadows, biting deep, whole portions falling away and dissipating. The Netha slowed. Dante pushed back with some final reserve, causing the shadows to buckle along the seams Gladik had sliced into them. Everything came to a halt. Both sides strained against each other, neither advancing nor retreating. Gladik adjusted a single beam by a matter of inches. It cut into the underside of the shadows. Without warning, the Lich's entire attack collapsed, fluttering away like black ash. Dante fell back, chest heaving. His jabat was drenched with sweat. Blaze glanced back, still paddling for all he was worth.
"Was that as close as it felt?"
"Not sure," Dante said. "Did it feel like we were about to get ripped into a pile of bloody guts?"
"That wouldn't be entirely bad. At least I'd finally get to shake hands with my liver for all its fine service."
Dante groped clumsily at the Netha, gathering more to defend against the next assault. Behind them, the Blighted paddled harder yet through the last specks of decaying shadows. Gladik gripped the gunwale, sweat tracking through the wrinkles of his forehead.
"He fears overextending himself while he remains weak. Either the Blighted will overwhelm us, or we will deplete ourselves slaughtering them."
"Nice plan," Dante said. "Would be a shame if someone decided to thwart it."
He felt down for the soil beneath them. For the most part,
The swamp's waters varied between 10 and 20 feet in depth, but some portions of the bed were no more than 2 or 3 feet beneath the surface. He located one such spot just ahead of them. As they passed over it, he pulled the dirt upward, mounding it until it was inches from breaking into the open. The blighted ploughed onward, gaining steadily. When the enemy canoes were 10 feet from the shallows, Dante yanked the ground upward into a series of jagged rills and spikes, hardening it into stone. The canoes crashed into it with the hollow splinter of broken hulls. Pale bodies flew out with the impact, still gripping their paddles. The second wave of ships crunched into the first, snarling themselves against the barrier of rocks. Naren made an obscene gesture at the pileup. Blaze and Volo opened up space, heading for a small tunnel through the trees. Behind them, ether glimmered across the raised stones, which sank beneath the water, returning to their original state of silt. A handful of boats stopped to pick up the blighted from the wrecked canoes. The others didn't break speed. But Dante's maneuver had put them several hundred feet ahead of their foes. They sped through the gap in the trees, entering a maze-like profusion of trees and minor islands. As Volo steered them down one of the many pathways, guided by some Tenarian trail marker Dante couldn't make out, or, perhaps, guided only by her completely reasonable terror of all the things chasing them, Dante harvested the trees across the waterway behind them.
"You should save your strength," Gladick said. "A few branches won't so much as slow him down. Unless it makes the Blighted think there's no path there at all."
He had lost one of his dragonfly spies at some point. Most likely his focus had lapsed while they'd been fending off the White Lich's onslaught, but he sent one of the two survivors to keep watch over the hidden pathway. The Blighted entered the maze-like area and slowed, gnashing their teeth in confusion. The Lich stopped, surveying the trees dispassionately. He tilted back his head, then waved his hand. Ether danced along the branches. When it reached the section Dante had altered, it lit up like a lantern. The Lich's mouth twitched. He flicked his hand, returning the trees to their unaltered state. The Blighted raced into the tunnel.
"I have successfully bought us several whole seconds," Dante announced. "We might want to consider going faster."
"Then you might want to consider paddling," Blaze said.
"With what? My hands? And after the Ziki Oko eat them, should I use my elbows?" "Oh, your face. No one will miss that."
Dante spared a dollop of nether to soothe their strained muscles. Even so, the Blighted gained ground, with the White Lich right behind them to undo Dante's attempts to block or snarl the trail.
"We got a plan here." Volo's voice was as tight as a harp string. "Or are we just hoping that dead people will get tired soon?"
"I thought we'd discourage them by paddling until we're too lean to have any flavor," Blaze said. "Or we could give them Gladick. He's so sour, they'll probably let the rest of us go."
Dante's mind chased its own tail. They couldn't outrun their foes, couldn't hide themselves or their trail. So what was left? Face the White Lich and his armies, and hope Gladick had been wrong about everything. As the enemy canoes closed distance, division spread to the left and right, preparing to hem them in. Standing in his command vessel, the White Lich lifted his hands. A storm of geometric lightning crackled toward their canoe. Gladick met it with a cloud of nether that boiled away in the face of the driving light. Dante kept one eye on the sorcerous battle, and the other on the way ahead, searching for some way out. Volo had angled to port to avoid a string of islands ahead. As they got closer, the many islands turned out to be a single long mass.
Outside of the wound, it was one of the largest pieces of land Dante had seen in the swamp.
I grow weak. Gladick sounded more disappointed in himself than angry or afraid. Another minute and he will have sapped me dry.
The oversized island grew closer, forcing Volo to veer further to port and closer to the left flank of the enemy formation. The blighted bared their teeth hungrily. Dante grinned back at them.
Turn back to starboard. Take us to the island.
Volo shot him a glance. To make a stand? That's the best we can do.
Sometimes, Naren said, that's all you can do.
She and Blaze corrected course toward the island. Gladick beat down another multi-pronged thrust of lightning. Dante reached for the nether, gathering it from all the death the swamps had hosted throughout the ages.
The walls are sheer,
Volo said, squinting at the sides of the island, which were at least 8 feet high and completely vertical.
I'm not seeing anywhere to make landfall.
Dante reached forward.
Aim for the middle.
She redirected course again, steering them closer toward the center of the island. A hatchet splashed into the water behind them, followed by a second. The next one struck the side of the hull with a dull clonk. As the blighted drew within range, some dropped their paddles and took up weapons. Saliva spilled from their mouths. Lightning flashed behind them. Gladick grunted, fighting it off with a shuddering hammer of nether. The island loomed ahead. Volo dragged her paddle in the water, backbeating to stop them from crashing into the rock.
Don't slow down! Dante yelled. Straight ahead!
Volo darted him a scared glance, then paddled on, shoulders straining. Dante reached into the stone, liquefying it and pulling it away to open a passage straight through the low cliff. Water spilled inside, and they followed it. The air smelled cool and like freshly broken rock. The light dimmed around them as Dante bored onward. Behind them, an enemy canoe raced toward the opening. Dante yanked the entrance shut, locking them in utter darkness. The other boat crunched against the stone seal. The splash of their paddles echoed through the narrow space. Gladick sent a ball of light to hover beyond the prow, illuminating the tunnel as it cleaved open just feet in front of them. At the same time, Dante closed the way behind them, pushing the water forward along with their canoe.
How far is it to the other side?
Blaze said.
Dante felt ahead.
Don't know. Is there a chance he could run out of juice before we get to it?
Anything's possible.
Unfortunate, Blaze said. Don't worry, though. If we get trapped in here, I'll bash you against the front wall until either it cracks open or you do.
The canoe sped on through a space that, while it advanced steadily, never grew any larger. Instead, as they continued, Dante shrank the gap to more tightly fit them and conserve his own energy. Everyone fell silent, as if speaking up would somehow acknowledge the impossibility of what they were doing and cause the universe to immediately correct itself. After a few hundred feet of travel, Dante felt his strength fading. Should he conserve energy and stop sealing the way behind them? But that would thin out the water until the canoe ground to a halt. It was light enough that they could carry it forward, but that would slow them down drastically. Maybe enough to allow the Lich's soldiers to circle around the island and ambush them as they...
Light exploded in front of them.
Dante threw his hands over his face. Someone cried out, possibly Volo, but it was hard to be sure. And they shot into a dreary, rainy day. After the blackness of the tunnel beneath the island, it seemed as bright as a coastal morning. They took 2 seconds to ensure they were alone, then struck out with all speed, vanishing into the depths of the swamp.